What is the setting? What is the background? This situation is 36 years after the Battle of Kurukshetra. And then Arjuna went to see Krishna in the world. And there was a reason he went 36 years after. I'll tell you the reason. That just after the war, 36. So, because Yudhishthira Maharaj, at the Battle of Kurukshetra, he ruled for 36 years. And that's described in Bhagavatam. And so this is, and there's another reason why 36 years, that after the Battle of Kurukshetra, Arjuna has gone to see Krishna. And this I'll tell you the reason. That Gandhari, after the battle, had called Krishna. And she said to him that she felt very angry at Krishna, and she felt that he was to blame for the slaughter. She knew that he tried for peace, but she felt that he should have forced the situation because he had an immense army. On top of that, he was actually an avatar. He was described as being an avatar, so he was, very, very powerful himself. And on top of that, the rishis had said, whatever is happening, that's all Krishna is doing. It's his plan, like this. So she felt that you're to blame. You actually made some shells, and you wanted to try to stop it, actually, if you had forced it. So she, she called Krishna before him, very, very angry, and she said that the Pandavas and the Kurus, and when we say the Pandavas, we mean all those who follow the Pandavas, not just the five brothers, the whole army is there. The Pandavas and the Kurus were rooted out before your eyes. Why were you indifferent? You could have prevented it, that slaughter. You did it deliberately. So now, Krishna, you pay the consequences, as was his telling Krishna. He said, by the merit of me serving my husband, I will curse you. And she was very angry, and cursed Krishna. You allowed the Pandavas and Kurus to kill one another, so similarly, you will kill your own kinsmen 36 years from now. And finally, you will die yourself by foul means. This is, when you see this throughout the Mahabharata and Ravi Yam, but this always stood out in my mind whenever I read those books, that, everyone, there's all these curses, some have done this, and, the curse was always very fitting, There's always an exact, punishment. Anyway, she said, the ladies of your family will weep as the Kuru ladies are now doing. So it's a good thing. So, Krishna, he bowed his head and folded his hands respectfully. He said, actually, your words are true that no one can exterminate the Rishis and the Yadavas and actually you assisted me by your curse. Because I was wondering how to take them out of the world, but no one can destroy them. So you've actually helped me. I was wondering how we could do this. And of course, actually the Pandavas, see, Arjuna was present here, and the Pandavas. And they were very, very sad to hear that, how are we going to live in the absence of Krishna? So they understood, 36 years from now, he may leave this world. So then Krishna said to Gandhari, rise up, Gandhari. This is not befitting. You shake off this grief. Your son Duryodhana, your He was malicious, envious, and arrogant. Why blame others for your own fault of supporting this rascal? From the start, you should not have allowed your son to live. So actually, when Jehudah was born, that they were advised better to kill him. He will cause the death of so many people that you will actually give so much benefit to this world to kill your own son subsequently. So, he said he's the embodiment of hostility and disobedience to elders and superiors. So he better fit him in. So he's saying this, he says, besides that, chapter of women, bring up their sons just to die in battle. So give up this freedom like that. So, this is, therefore, Arjuna understood. In 36 years had passed, he understood, I want to go to see Krishna, because he knew it was time for his departure. He wanted to see Krishna one last time. And they all hoped that Arjuna might persuade Krishna to visit, and maybe even convince Krishna to counteract the curse of Gandhari and stay. So it's a very interesting point, counteracting curses. Now this curse, they felt that Gandhari's curse upon Krishna was something that could be counteracted because she was at fault. So she's making a curse, and yet she's at fault. And she's also cursing, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And that curse is trying to override the well wishes of all the devotees of the Lord. So they felt they wanted him. But what happened was, as described in the 11th canto, chapter 6, that there was another curse by the Brahmins. You know the story of Samba, being the boy, and he approached Narada and the sages, and he pretended to be a young girl, and he hit he had an iron lump, and he said, is it going to be a boy or a girl? You are all knowing sages, so he was, he was so smart. So they cursed him, that you'll give birth to that iron lump of, I forget the exact words, but it'll be the destruction, because that iron lump was filed down into, they tried to remove the curse by filing it down into different iron filings, and they threw it in the river or something, but it came up into the reeds, and the reeds became like swords, and ended up, there was some intoxication as a result of the curse of the Brahmins. They ended up getting destroyed. But the point was that Krishna himself, in the beginning, he also, just at that time, he saw that there were so many inauspicious omens in Dwarka, which is very unusual, that he said that therefore, and he said, we must leave, everything will be destroyed. And he said, you cannot counteract the curse of the Brahmana. So perhaps Gandhari is good, the curse of the Brahmana. Actually, there's one step above that, and that is the if one becomes condemned by a Vaishnava. So there's an interesting, to understand that is very difficult, because Vaishnavas are very merciful. And but we have to look at, there's some pastimes with Guru Kishore Das Babaji. Now he noted that with his Guru Maharaj, Guru Kishore Das Babaji, that there were very many materialistic, foolish, envious, rascals, and they would masquerade as devotees. And they would imitate devotion, and they would try to, so brought ashore in order to get some fame and prestige, we started to derive all sorts of material benefits. But their minds, you know, they just absorbed in materialistic things. So generally he would tolerate them, but sometimes it was, he felt that person was so insincere, such a hypocrite, he would be quite humorous in the way he dealt with them. He would reciprocate with them according to their insincerity, according to the level. So then he would not encourage them to stay, and he would say to them, they would come, yes, I've come for your blessings, and he would say, you get back to where you come from, otherwise everything you have will be ruined, and your house and everything you own will be burned to the ground. No, because that was actually his mercy. You know, we have to understand that. That, you know, I'll just finish what he said to Bhakti, and then I'll explain. So, Bhakti Vinod Kaur also says that one who criticizes the Vaishnava commits violence, and he will not speak to that person. Bhakti Vinod Kaur, he will not speak to them. So, Bhakti Siddhanta, Sri Gaurakishore Das Babaji said to Bhakti Siddhanta that, you know, actually, an elevated devotee of your stature should not intervene on behalf of this hypocrite, because although you are merciful, his plea for mercy is artificial. He's not actually after mercy to be a devotee, he's after some other materialistic thing. So, you know, someone of your stature should understand that, and you should not intervene when a Vaishnava has condemned that person. And to understand that, because if a person is so insincere that they associate with devotees, especially senior Vaishnavas, and they don't actually hear, they don't take instruction, they're so insincere that they actually won't take instruction, and they commit serious offences, that person becomes 100,000 times more condemned than what their ordinary, you know, sinful materialist activities would condemn them. You know, if they just become an ordinary materialistic person, they'll suffer. If they, you know, associate with Vaishnavas being so insincere that they can't derive a benefit, it will condemn them so much that it's actually great mercy upon them to make it, you know, to not associate with them. We shouldn't think that Gaurakishore Das Babaji was being hard, but you know, the point is that here, you know, there are different levels of being condemned, cursed, what have you. Some are more serious than others, but you know, these Pandavas felt that Gandhari's curse could possibly, of course, once they became cursed by the Brahmana, then nothing could stop that. And of course, some of those Brahmins were Vaishnavas. So, therefore, Yudhisthira, Arjuna did not return after 7 months, and he saw these inauspicious omens, which were very fearful in themselves. And you've heard the seasonal irregularities, people becoming, you know, accustomed to the normal state of to be was to always be greedy and proud and angry, deceitful, you know, engaged in foul activities. All ordinary dealings were polluted with quarrel and cheating, even between friends and well-wishers. So, you know, seeing this, he said to Bhishma that I send Arjuna, and you know, perhaps has Krishna departed, as Narada Muni, you know, has told us. So he considered that this would be very, very inauspicious for us, because that, I think that was yesterday's verse, that every single wonderful thing that we have achieved, retained, is simply by the mercy of God, of Krishna. Because, and, you know, it might have been the day before, but he said that the devotees, Prabhupada's mentions in that purport, the devotees know that the facilities, you know, they're not earned. What we get in life is not earned just by one's hard labor, nor by unfair means. You know, they come by the grace of God. You know, the devotee understands that. There was a Vivekananda who came to the West, sort of one of the first big Indian preachers, supposedly presenting Indian philosophy, but he was a Mayavadi. And, you know, in his speech, one of his very, you know, well-quoted speeches, he said that, you know, why are you worshipping God in the temple? And you're the one working hard, so why are you giving him credit? And, you know, there are different... See, in the Vedas, it says that we get strength to advance in spiritual life, self-realization, God-realization, and prosperity, you know, by Bala, you know, Balaram, Baladeva. So, Vivekananda interprets this that Bala means you be stout and strong. So if you're stout and strong, you eat lots of meat, because this is from the Ramakrishna movement, they eat meat. And you do the yoga gymnastics, like this, then you can, when you're very stout and strong, you can gradually come to know yourself, you know, by performing these yoga asanas and being strong, and gradually realize that you are God. Therefore, from this philosophy comes the Ramakrishna movement of Dravidian Narayan, that you know, you first give food and charity to the people and make them strong. You know, then we can talk about God consciousness and going to the temple, and that's not good. You know, you first give them food, give them some, you know, charity, make them strong, fit, healthy, and wealthy. Then let's talk about temples and God consciousness. But we understand that, you know, Baladeva, Balaram means that, you know, you go to the temple, you pray to, you know, for Balaram, for the Chinanda, you get his mercy. Then when you do work, the results will come, especially if you work fairly with that. So, you know, Yudhisthira, anyway, he was feeling very, very, these many inauspicious omens. So, this one today, that the left side of my body, my thighs, arms, eyes, are all quivering again and again, and I'm having heart palpitations due to fear, all this indicates undesirable happenings. So, you know, this has always been an interesting verse for me, and when I read this, when I joined the movement, it answered a question that had... you know, bothered me since before I was a rascal devotee. But because as a teenager, you know, I used to do silly things, strange for teenagers, and you know, go out and party and things like that. Mostly, you know, I hung around with a group of, you know, friends. We weren't that much interested in girls. We were mostly just drinking, smoking, dancing, and having fun. Did a few parts. So anyway, what happened was that the left side of my thighs and my arms used to just shake like this. You know, I'd be driving, I'd be sort of, my friend would be there, and I'd sort of try and go. It was shaking, you know, and I couldn't stop it by trying to hold it a little bit. And that, as you know, I couldn't understand, you know. This is sort of in the, like, in the year leading up to when I was a devotee. And it used to happen when I used to go out to party. And the day I became a devotee, it stopped. Never had it again that day. Which is the point that Prabhupada makes in this purport, that you know, if you keep constant touch with Krishna, it actually gives you relief from inauspicious, you know, omens, inauspicious occasion, because these same omens are also mentioned in the astrological sastras. So, because Harisava, which is sort of like the Bhagavad Gita of astrology, is it is written by Parasara Muni, who is the father of Shiva Vyasadeva. And these same things, the same sort of omens there, in the astrology shastras as well. So therefore, Yudhisthira is taken seriously. Some things in the different shastras that relate mostly for materialistic persons, like a lot of astrology is actually more for materialistic persons. So a lot of it is not necessary for devotees. It doesn't matter, mean that everything, some things are actually the same. So a devotee has to, be like the swan extracting the path, but we can only do that if something is confirmed by the Bhagavatam. If something is there in the Bhagavatam of Bhagavad Gita, then we understand that what may be there in literatures for those in the mode of ignorance, passion, and goodness is still applicable for Vaishnavas. Here, Yudhisthira, he's not taking this lightly. So there's an interesting story here about that, about the devotee's attitude to these things. That it's a story by Shivendra Jundagas from Maharaj. That one time he was in Russia, they were going to embark on a journey, and they left at about 3 p.m. and as they left, it began to snow. And there were 3 cars, and all these devotees were going to some program. So after an hour, the first car basically died. And now they're in the middle of a snowstorm. So what they had to do is all the devotees then had to cram into 2 cars, and their bags and this and the other. So then off they went in the snowstorm. They had to leave one guy with the car. So then after about an hour, in the middle of nowhere, as you can imagine in Russia, the second car runs out of petrol. So somehow or another they decide that they will tie a cable between one car and another. And they towed it. And then of course the police stopped them. Some say, what's going on with these guys? It looks a bit weird. And these overcrowded cars. Anyway, they checked their passports, they let them off. So, anyway, after about 5 hours, they arrived, about 5 hours late actually for their destination. So, he looked at his watch and he thought, now I know what we did wrong. What we did wrong is we embarked on a journey on a Thursday afternoon. You heard that? As a devotee, I can tell you, it's a very common saying amongst devotees, generally. And I'll tell you why it's a common saying, because it actually comes from Prabhupada. But it's well known in astrology. That, one time, so Indrajana Swami was saying, that one time Prabhupada's secretary told him that Prabhupada was very cautious to travel at this time. And if he had to travel, someone had booked him a traveling flight or drive on a Thursday afternoon, he would postpone it sometime, on a Friday. Or he would do other things as his spiritual master used to do. And Bhaktisiddhanta says what he used to do was that if he had to leave somewhere on a Thursday afternoon, then the previous night he would pack his bags and put them outside the door with his shoes. And it was considered that he left that previous night. So of course, I do that myself. But I don't put it outside. I actually put it in the car. I pack my bags, put it in the car. So that's what Bhaktisiddhanta says. And another time, Prabhupada was he was once leaving on a journey. As he started to walk, the devotee sneezed. Prabhupada stopped immediately. And Brahmananda, who understands these things, he said, Prabhupada, he had a cold. Oh. So Prabhupada continued on. You know, because if you continue, if you start a journey and for no apparent reason someone sneezes, you should stop, go back inside, spend a little time, wait a little bit, leave a bit later. But you know, Prabhupada used to follow these different things. That, you know, as I say, they're in Bhagavatam, they're in astrology. But you know, so then Maharaj was explaining that, as it says in here, a devotee tends to proceed very cautiously. You know, and this is Maharaj Yudhisthira's. Prabhupada says in the purport that material existence is full of undesirables. Things that we do not want are forced upon us by some superior energy, and we do not see that these undesirables are under the grip of the three modes of material nature. So, you know, because even an elevated Vaishnava understands that we have to proceed with great caution because we're in the material world and so many bad things can happen in a split second. So, you know, it's not that the Yudhisthira is considering, you know, there are you know, indications, inauspicious omens. Let us think, let us discuss, you know, something, you know, when very inauspicious things begin to happen, then the Vaishnava stops, okay, something is not correct. Let us assess, proceed very cautiously, not just, you know, push on blindly like that. So this is, you know, what Yudhisthira did, what Prabhupada can do. And of course, proceeding cautiously means what? It means that we always follow in the footsteps of the devotees. That it is a very dangerous path, you know, especially preaching. If you're preaching Krishna consciousness, you know, we're in the midst of Kali Yuga. Prabhupada said practically everyone is somewhat crazy. You have to, you know, follow very carefully the footsteps of the devotees so that you're safe. That means that you chant the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra, especially 16 rounds a day, you follow the four regular principles, you avoid the offenses, especially Vaishnava Aparadha and Guru Aparadha, that elephant offense. You stay in touch with the Supreme Lord Krishna while you're thinking about him, serving, chanting, and always, you know, prepare to listen to the devotees who are chalking out the path like that, about the dangers of material existence. Talking out, you know, here, proceed as a devotee this way, don't go that way, that is dangerous, don't, you know, like that, do these things. So, in this way, if we follow the path that Srila Prabhupada, who's following his acharyas and following the Panchatattva, that Prabhupada mentions in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, that, you know, if you follow those principles, which he mentions those exact principles in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, Adilila, chapter 7, that you will always be protected despite, you know, the difficulties of preaching in this paper cover. So I'm just going to leave it there, if anyone has any questions or comments. No.
We don't see.
You don't?
We don't see.
Are you good looking? Do you know what the omens are?
No, some of them like rain of blood and like
things. Yeah, well, I mean, this was, of course, here, the Supreme Personality of Godhead is leaving the planet, so that's a big one. You know, according to the severity of what's going to happen, the omens may be, you know. Once when I was leaving Winchelsea, for the temple, somewhere, it was night time, and I started stopped at the public toilets, and when I got there, there was a busload of Asian tourists. And they were looking up at the sky, and I looked up, and there was a ring around the moon, and they're going, "Oh, isn't that beautiful? Oh, it's beautiful." And they're taking the picture. I said, "No, that's not good. This is a very bad omen. This is very bad. Something, a big disaster coming very soon." And I think the next day was the tsunami that hit Japan. These things are there, but we may not recognize them, and that's why the literatures are there. So, according to the shaking of the So he is describing the left side of the body. Now that refers to a man. So therefore, for a woman, if the right side is shaking and trembling, that's inauspicious for them. And for a woman, if the left side is trembling, or sometimes the left eye trembles, that's auspicious of what they need, some action coming or something. Good husband. I used to teach a course when I was on the farm for the children, and we used to study omens and things. And one of the things we used to do, which I had a lot of fun, was to look at their feet and see if you can find auspicious markings, like those triangles and fish. You don't want rats and snakes. But we would look at, thank God they all have these nice little conch shells and whatever like that. But they have a lot of fun with it. But it means that people have auspicious life as well. These things are there. Any other questions?
Yeah.